Right now, it's time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about what else? The glorious aspects of food. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Everybody knows I've been on a diet, right?
Yep, you and me both. Yep.
That's right. You're doing much better than I am on a more sensible diet. I don't know what your weight is down, but mine, I haven't talked too much about it because I got stuck.
Well, you know, I was stuck for a while at 60-some pounds, and now I'm 83 pounds down.
Oh, my. Oh, last time I checked in, Marshall, you were only 70.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot. Well, mazel tov. I finally, this week, suddenly went down 4 pounds after not budging for at least a month. And, in fact, going up a little bit, and down a little bit, but basically not going anywhere. Anyway, during this period, you get disgusted. And I had to cheat a little bit because I have to say, carbohydrates are calming. And I don't remember what happened anymore, but on one particularly bad day that I was upset about something, I go to watch the news, and it got me even more upset. And my go-to, you know, it should be a carbohydrate, but I often don't have those to fall back on. You know, it has to be a drink of some kind of alcoholic beverage. In any case, I've been craving different things, and truthfully, you know, even if you're on a super low carbohydrate diet, you can afford to eat certain things that I'm craving, like fried chicken. So I figured it out, and buttermilk, which I'm going to do, by the way, I have the chicken, I have the buttermilk. I'm still working on that buttermilk that I bought to make for a quarter of a cup in a salad dressing. But anyway, I need to use up the buttermilk. So I'm going to soak the chicken in buttermilk for at least 12 hours, probably more, because I'll probably put it up at night, and then by the time lunchtime the next day is probably more, well, whatever, a number of hours in a seasoned buttermilk. And then dredge it in seasoned flour. Now, I figured it out that you're only adding about 10 grams of carbohydrate per thigh or drumstick, I guess, or probably a few less with a wing, after you dredge all this chicken. So it doesn't really come out to that much. At the very, very best, I'm 20 carbs or 20 carbs a day. But the fact is, I can go up to 50, and it doesn't seem to make a difference in my weight loss. My body seems to deal fine with 50. And 50 grams of carb is not a little bit. Well, it is a little bit. But anyway, so fried chicken. So that's what I'm going to do. I've never made buttermilk marinated fried chicken. And so I read up about it. I'm going to make up my own seasoning mix for it, mainly because every recipe I've read contains garlic powder and onion powder, two ingredients that I don't tolerate well. The onion powder I can deal with a little bit, but the garlic powder, I know right away when something's made with garlic powder and I don't like it. Anyway, so that's the fried chicken. And by the way, frying, you know, I hear people say, oh, but he's on a diet, how could he eat fried anything? Well, oil is a good thing. Fat is a good thing on the diet that I'm on, the so-called keto diet, which I read recently is the most popular weight loss diet in America right now. And I understand, certainly if you want a quick weight loss, you can do that on keto and then go off and you'll gain it right back, of course. You and I need a sustainable, as my friend Jeffrey said, diet. And I've sustained this for 10 months now, 55 pounds, not bad, 5.5 pounds a month. I figure it's like 5 pounds a month. In any case, what you want on this diet is fat and not that much protein and as few carbs as you can get away with. That's how I put it. And I've discovered that the best foods for this diet that have the fat-protein ratio that I'm looking for, which is really, believe it or not, 75% of my calories coming from fat and only 25% from protein. But the best ones I'm finding for that something near that ratio, at least more fat than protein, chicken wings, that's not a hardship. Spare ribs or any kind of rib meat, which, you know, is usually laced with fat. You got to beware of barbecue sauce because some of them are very sugary. Certainly, most people, when they even make their own, put sugar in. If you're only putting a little sugar in, okay. But you look at some barbecue sauce recipes, and they're largely sugar, which you don't want. There are sugar-free barbecue sauces, by the way, in the supermarket. You can buy in a bottle. And I've tried two different brands, and they're both very good. You don't miss the sugar at all. Steak, who can complain? Get a nice, well-marbled piece of a rib steak or a strip steak. Any kind of nicely marbled meat is got the ratio. And something that I make a lot of because we like it, chili, as we used to call it, chili con carne, which is a totally American concept. My Mexican housekeeper stuck her nose up in the air when I mentioned this to her. And it ends up, the reason is she has another client who makes, as she says, really disgusting chili. So, and she told me what the woman puts in, and I said, well, no, I don't put any of those things in. So I made it the other day while she was here, and she tasted mine, and she really liked it. So this gets the stamp of approval of a very good, I have to say, because I've eaten at her house, and she brings me food, she's a very good Mexican cook. And she approved of my chili. So one of the reasons I think she, and by the way, I put oregano in, I put cumin in. She did not taste those things, even though she agrees that they belong there. She really did get the whole idea here, which is it's a blend. It's a blend of flavors that you shouldn't pick one out. So I make my own chili powder, though. And because if you look at the supermarket brands, even the not supermarket brands, meaning the specialty brands, they all contain a lot of stuff other than chili powder, other than chilies. And I used to do this, and I used to buy something that was all chili, but not anymore. I can't find it. So I've taken to making my own. And as I live in a place where there are incredibly good Mexican groceries, I went to my local Mexican grocery, and I bought four different kinds of pepper to make my chili powder, and I fooled around with the proportions a little bit until I came up with a formula that I like, and I may have given this before, but this is easy, and it really makes a big difference in your chili, however you do your chili. Two ancho chilies, six guajillo chilies, four morito chilies, and two costeño. Only the costeño have any heat, any significant heat. So this is about flavor. And I do seed the chilies. They're dried chilies. They keep forever. Not ever, but they keep for a lot of years. I use them up before they go crisp. But the ones that I buy in the cellophane bags are very pliable. And you cut off the stem end. I use a scissor for this. I cut off the stem end. I shake out most of the seeds. And then I cut up the pepper, and I put it in a bowl. I cut it up into little pieces. It's eventually, after it's all done like that, going to go into my spice grinder. What I actually have is $20 spice grinder I've been using for at least 20 years to grind spices. And now it's devoted only to chilies because I use them more than I do, for instance, well, whatever, other spices. So, and then I grind them all up, mix it well so that, you know, all the different peppers are mingled. And then I use about a slightly rounded quarter cup of this mixture for 2 pounds of ground meat. I saute a large onion and about 6 cloves of very finely chopped garlic. After the onion gets tender, I put it in any kind of oil. Either olive oil or vegetable oil, doesn't matter. you saute the onion for, you know, until it's sort of tender. Throw in the chopped garlic. Cook that for a minute or so until the garlic fragrance comes up at you. And then put in your ground meat, 2 pounds of ground. I use 80% lean, 20% fat, which is not very lean. It's normal, I think, hamburger proportions. And I crumble that into the pot, and then I add about a teaspoon of salt, and I break up the meat and keep cooking it until it's all not raw looking anymore. No streaks of raw in there. And I add the chili powder just when I add the meat. And then I add a 28-ounce can of plum tomatoes, which I break up with my spoon. I don't want to dirty any other utensils or receptacles. And add a tablespoon of dried oregano and a tablespoon of ground cumin, and you won't need any pepper. Chilies are pepper, after all. And stir it all together, and as I said, break up the tomatoes, and let it simmer for about a half an hour to 40 minutes. That's usually all it needs. And then I like to set it aside and let it come to room temperature, and then pack it up and eat it the day after it's made, and then the day after that and the day after that. This makes enough for several meals for us. And so that's why I make it, because, you know, I can just pop, even if I just put it in the freezer, I could just pop it into the microwave to defrost, and it's instant dinner. So that's another diet recipe. Oh, by the way, so for months now, I've been eating chili, more or less like that, and topped with, by the way, these are totally allowable garnishes, avocado, which, by the way, is a real keto diet staple. Avocados are another one of those foods that have the perfect ratio, or they just have a lot of fat. And sour cream, I'm allowed to do that too. Now, people say, oh, but so many calories. Let me say that at the beginning of this diet, they say, and I did, eat everything in sight that I was allowed. But very quickly, your appetite diminishes. The high fat, moderate protein, low carb formula reduces your appetite. It really does work that way. And so you don't worry about the calories in the beginning, and after a while you won't have to worry, think about it, because you're going to lose weight even though you're eating whatever you want to eat. So, but I'm not eating whatever I want to eat. I have treated myself to pizza. It's one of my cravings. I have had Italian hero sandwiches. Now, the filling, of course, is totally allowable, but it's the bread. I have to say, I can eat cold cuts for their own sake with some coleslaw on the side. It ain't the same as putting it on a sandwich, on good bread. And so even though I was not eating white bread before I went on this diet, I was only eating whole grain breads, I now crave white bread. So I've had Italian heroes. In fact, spending time in Philadelphia, I've actually had some... I did a sampling of Italian hoagies in Philadelphia, so I know which one is my go-to now. But here in my own neighborhood, it ends up, by accident, I called the wrong pizzeria. I don't know what was going on in my head at that moment, but I called the wrong pizzeria, got a delivery, and I wasn't even having pizza. Bob was having meatballs, which is a go-to a delivered item for him. And I decided to order the Italian hero because I needed a splurge, carb splurge. The hero arrives in a hero-sized, beautiful box. It could have been a piece of crystal in there. And it was wrapped in tissue paper inside. And I thought, my God, and when I opened the bag, I saw this. I said, they take their hero sandwiches seriously. This is going to be a good hero. And it was. So I've done that twice now. And so I do cheat. But there are things, it's interesting, there are things that I would normally think of as cheating on any diet are now allowable. For instance, I'm going to have to wait till we have a cool wave, but I'm not doing this in a heat wave. But I was watching Andrew Zimmern on TV the other day. He's the guy who does Delicious Destinations.
Yeah.
And he was in Warsaw. And he went to a restaurant where they make bigosh, or bigos, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. It's, in English, we call it hunter's stew, but it's way more than just hunter's stew. And he went to a restaurant where they make it the way the young chef's grandmother made it, and then they had people in the restaurant eating it and saying, oh, this is just the way it tastes when my grandmother makes it. So now I want to make it. And I do have a recipe for it in one of my books. I think it may be Cooking in a Small Kitchen, because it's one of those things that's made in, you can make it in one pot. And Cooking in a Small Kitchen was often about cooking in one pot. I don't really want to look it up right now, because you can find many recipes for bigos on the internet. And it is something that is totally not only allowed, I would think, but encouraged on the diet I'm on. But it has to cook a long, long time. And as everybody who is Polish will tell you, it's better reheated. Oh, by the way, that my chili is better reheated. I'm not sure I said that. Anyway, so bigos is better reheated, and so you don't want to make it on a day, you know, it's 90 degrees or 90% humidity even. It's different meats, and the reason it's called hunter stew is it usually has some kind of hunted meat like venison in it. Could be other hunted meat. Kielbasa, what's a Polish dish without kielbasa? Both sauerkraut, which is fermented cabbage, and fresh cabbage, and who knows what else. The one that they made on TV, the man made it, and then at the very end he added a bottle of red wine, and then he cooked it more, and then he refrigerated it, and then he reheated it. So it's like that. But those kind of dishes, which usually, you know, they're highly caloric and heavy, are not, you know, expected on a diet. But if you crave things like that, this is the diet for you.
What you said about your appetite, my appetite, because I've been doing this now for 14 months, and I'm losing, it's about the same as you, 5.5 pounds a month is what it comes out to over the course of 14 or 15 months. But I finally have broken the habit. I've been preparing myself, even if it's a sandwich, if I have a tomato sandwich, all right, that I make with a little bit of mustard, I can only eat half of it. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
How my stomach has adapted to.
Well,
where...
I don't know that that's the reason. You know, we always used to say your stomach shrinks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I eat large quantities of allowable things, so I don't think my stomach has shrunk as much as really it's reset my appetite somehow. I mean, I do crave things, but very often when I go to eat something that I've been craving, a carb, I can't eat very much of it.
Well, it's you know, it's funny. I got some fresh onions I forget what they were called, but I was got and some two fresh potatoes out of the ground yesterday. So what I did is I baked one of the potatoes, and then I chopped, put it in cubes, and while I was baking the potatoes, I took the fresh out-of-the-ground onions, washed them off, scapes, and then I got some scapes, and I sautéed them in a different pan, and then I just put them in with the potatoes and a little bit of garlic and olive oil. What a great dinner.
I would think.
Yeah, what a great dinner. And simple dinner. And
well, you know, the potato is what made it.
Yeah. No, really, the vessel, that's exactly, you're exactly
right.
Yeah,
the
right.
Potato. So, I, you know, there are certain things that say, I just won't have the pasta or the potato, but it's not, or the bread, but it ain't the same. You know, by the way, here's a product that you might be interested in, anybody might be interested. They're called Parm, P-A-R-M, as in Parmigiano, or Parmesan, crisps. And I discovered them because they were listed in the Vermont Country Store catalog. And so at great expense, I bought two boxes. You had to buy two, I think. And I'm telling you, like, two boxes was like $25 with the delivery. It was ridiculous, but they're just cheese. So I get them, and they're really delicious. But I thought it was a crazy price. So I go online, and I find them through an Amazon source at literally half the price. Instead of $12 a box, they're $6 a box. So for $25, I got four boxes, not two. And I bought that. Then I go to the supermarket the other day, Whole Foods, I got to say, and they're featuring Parm crisps in different flavors, as well as the original Parmigiano one. And so I bought them, and they're tiny ones. They're maybe an inch and a quarter across. So we played cards yesterday. It was a great snack while you're playing cards, because they're easily popped in your mouth. But the ones I bought online are more like a three, maybe 2.5 inches across. They're like a real cracker. And so I'm missing crackers, because that's all carbs after all. And these really do, you know, scratch that itch. And they're also a great snack item. And they also go great with the drink, which I have every day. So do you want my recipe? This is such an easy recipe. I'm embarrassed.
No, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, but this is the ricotta cake, the Italian cheesecake of my dreams, except it doesn't have to dream about it anymore because here's the recipe. Now, I figured this out, and it has a reason I was even thinking about it. I'm thinking a ricotta cake doesn't have flour, so it can't be that high in carbs. And in fact, I figured this one out. It has a cup and a quarter of sugar. That's, by the way, the first ingredient. 1 1/4 cups of sugar. And 1/3 cup of all-purpose flour. And 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Those are the dry ingredients. Mix them all together in a bowl and put it aside. In your stand mixer or with a handheld mixer, that's fine too, electric mixer, beat 3 pounds of whole milk ricotta. Now, why is this 3 pounds? Because ricotta comes in 3 pound containers. So I formulated this given the given of the large container of whole milk ricotta, not skim milk, please. So beat that in your mixer or with the mixer until it looks smoother than it did out of the container, which doesn't take more than 30 seconds to a minute. And then, one by one, add 9 large eggs. 9. And you want to beat each one in before you add the next. That's a traditional, a standard, I should say, method. And then you beat into that a tablespoon, this is a lot, I know, of vanilla extract. And if you have nice lemons and oranges, the grated zest of a lemon, the grated zest of an orange, this is very Southern Italian. I find that these days sometimes the lemons and oranges don't really have a whole lot of flavor. But anyway, I like to add it myself, and I use the microplane for this. And a whole lemon and a whole orange will give you some flavor. So you beat all of that together. It's going to be really smooth. And you pour the batter. Now, here's just, oh, by the way, of course, at the very end, you're going to add that mixture of dry ingredients. And you just have to mix that in until it's well blended. The prepared pan. So you have a lot of choices here. But basically, butter a 9-inch springform pan and then line it either with graham cracker crumbs or perhaps, if you don't want any carbs there, ground almonds. You can use the almond flour right out of the bag. Or amaretti. My original recipe calls for crushed amaretti cookies, which add another little layer of flavor, very little, but makes a nice little crust on the outside. So, or even, you know, any kind of cookie crust you could do. I mean, I don't like the combination of the chocolate and cheesecake, but if you love it, grind up some chocolate wafers. Anyway, you put this. Now, I always, when I'm doing some, I'm going to put this in a water bath, and whenever I do that in a springform pan, it makes me nervous. So I drape a piece of aluminum foil over the bottom of the pan, you know, so that if there's any leakage one way or the other, well, there won't be any leakage one way or the other. So you put that in a roasting pan, and your oven should be set for, I think, 350. Let me just double-check that. Yeah, 350. And you want to bake this in the more or less center of the oven, or the top third of the oven, no further down than the center of the oven. And you put in boiling or just boiled water into the outer roasting pan. And this seems long, but it needs to bake for 1.5 hours. And once it is baked for 1.5 hours, take the whole roasting pan out of the oven and let the cake in its water bath cool until the water around it is tepid, meaning a couple of hours. Then remove the springform pan from the water bath and finish the cooling on a rack. And when it's fully cooled to room temperature, refrigerate it. Now, I made this cake, which, as I said, is Italian-American, while I was in Italy, and I was at Cecilia's agriturism kitchen, meaning the big kitchen for which they cater a million things. And I left the cake to, finally, it was out of the pan and cooling to go in the refrigerator. I left it on the counter, and I came back to put it in the refrigerator, and it was gone. It took a while to figure out what happened to it. Cecilia's son, an adult, by the way, he's in his 50s now. He was probably in his 40s then. Maybe 30s. Anyway, he had eaten the whole thing. And he, by the way, he does have a large appetite. And he's a runner. And not anymore, but he was a runner. And he always says, "I run so I can eat." Anyway, he was big no matter what. In any case, this cake is sensational when it is warm or at room temperature, just after it's made or hours after it's made. It is almost like a ricotta souffle. We, however, don't really want to eat it that way. We want to eat it as a nice, creamy, dense, rich cheesecake. And so for that, you need to refrigerate it, I would say, overnight.
Yeah, it becomes
you
more...
Can eat, by the way, you can eat it for breakfast. So if you make it one day and you refrigerate it next morning... Have some for breakfast.
It makes it savory when you put it when you bring it out. It adds that savory aspect to it.
I guess it does. Yeah. Listen, I'm telling you, as a ricotta souffle, still warm, it's pretty sensational. But I wouldn't eat it that way. And so I figured this out. This makes certainly it makes 8 slices, but probably more like 10 to 12. I mean, it's a substantial cheesecake. And in the end, it doesn't come out to that many carbohydrates. I mean, 1¼ cups of sugar distributed over 10 portions is not very much.
Minimal. All right.
So, you know, you have to do your homework, or I should say your arithmetic. No, people do this, and they, you know, they don't really get into the details, but... What else do I have to do the last 10 months I'm on this diet? You know, when you want to eat well, you have to cook at home, though. I have to say, unless you want to go out for a steak, you can do that. Most steakhouses are a good place for this diet. You get a steak, good vegetable, could be even loaded with butter. Just don't have the house potatoes.
All righty.
We're in for, I think, a reasonably temperatured week.
Yes, it'll be rainy up here all week long with thunderstorms.
Yeah, I think here too. Well, today it was sunny when I got on the air, but now it's overcast.
All right. Well, we'll speak to you next week, Arthur.
I hope so.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.